The idea is that our bodies are designed to heal themselves, and we see that, like, if we think about a cut, like if I get a cut, paper cut, an injury, my body has a genetic programming to heal that, to make it become a scab and then eventually a scar. The idea is that our body also has mechanisms internally that are designed to heal themselves. And one of the mechanisms that has been found to be an agent in this is REM sleep. So when we go to sleep, there's one of the stages of sleep where our eyes are moving back and forth very rapidly. And research has found that it seems as if that's actually a problem-solving technique. And from an evolutionary psychology perspective, it really helps prepare us for the next day to protect our survival.
Did you ever notice that two things can be true at the exact same time? Hey there, I'm Jessica. I am a therapist by day and a writer, speaker, podcaster, and personal development enthusiast the rest of the time. But really, I'm just one of your virtual gal pals chatting it up about life. I believe that we are all on our own unique journey and that we don't fit into just one category. We all have an and. This podcast will feature inspiration, motivation, and interviews with people just like you who are living into their and, as well as the stories that got them there. Inside these episodes, you will find the tools that you need and the inspiration that you crave to live into your and too. Thank you for letting me be a part of your journey as you build a life that you love to live. Welcome to Brutiful Journey, the podcast. Today was a good one because I got to sit down with the talented Lauren Day. I loved our conversation about all things therapy, but I especially love all the juicy tidbits about her career progression and how this gal just gets things done. I appreciate her and her wisdom so much. So without any further ado, here she is, my gal, Lauren Day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Brutiful Journey of the Podcast. I'm super, super excited to be here today because I am with Lauren Day, who is one of my mentors in terms of therapy and also the owner of LK Institute in the Phoenix area. And I'm so excited to have you here to share your story. Thanks for being here, Lauren.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I mentioned a little bit before we hopped on that kind of the inspiration behind this podcast is I see like a young gal listening to it, not totally sure what she wants to do with her life. And also like, you know, afraid of making the wrong decisions and all of those things. And so I've been really drawn to like successful, powerful, educated, like women who just like are kind of owning it. And so that's really why I asked you to be here today. So I would love if you would share kind of your journey. I like to say, like, what's the story of Lauren?
Well, thank you for the nice accolades. I don't know if they're all completely true, but I appreciate that. I grew up in Houston, Texas, and always had a passion for psychology, more from the science perspective. I was just super into analyzing human behavior. I just was obsessed with it. I loved predicting it. I loved understanding it. I was probably less on the, I wanted to help people, but less of the just caring, compassionate, empathy overload. It was more about, I wanted to calculate why people did the things they did.
Yeah.
And I started, I loved the problem-solving piece of it. I still do. So went to college, and I had kind of a difficult decision to make because I always wanted to be a teacher, but I wanted to be a teacher of psychology. I loved academia. At that point, I didn't know a lot about my options. So I had to decide between becoming getting a major in psychology or education. Turned out I couldn't do both. So I picked psychology and just thought, you know what? There's an opportunity to teach in the future. I'll figure it out then. So pursued that and really became passionate about trauma, but more, again, wanting to understand it. So I really thought, because I was young and didn't know as much as I know now, but I thought that in order for me to really understand victims, I needed to understand perpetrators. So I worked really hard to get into a forensic and correctional research lab and was part of a team that interviewed incarcerated offenders with severe and persistent mental illness for a couple of years, and really tried to gain an understanding of sexual perpetrators and violent criminals. And what I kind of learned was that a lot of times perpetrators are really just victims. And that really shifted things for me to learn that trauma just is a circle. It just repeats on each other. And so decided to move away from that world, got into, worked in a few different places, did a crisis team with the psych hospital, did a family counseling center with primarily with children and play therapy. And then I found a home base, which was working with addiction. And that looked like I worked in eating disorder programs and substance use, and I was just at home. Those were my people, loved them. So got really invested in that and worked hard for that and had a few different jobs along the way, and every job I took was very strategic. I had very calculated decisions about what I needed to, what job to take. It was not just what job I could get. And kind of had this long goal of getting to a place where I guess it could be where I am today. Hmm. So that's a nutshell, I guess, okay. Of the journey.
I love it. Well, and am I making up that you're working on your PhD right now, or is that true?
Yeah, I'm close. I'm all but dissertation, and COVID has just complicated things a little bit, but I'm hoping to be done in December. That's the goal. I should have been done already, but COVID threw things off. So yeah, absolutely.
COVID threw a lot of things off, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
So just because I'm curious, what is there words for what draws you to addictions? You said those are my people. Is there like, I like that, like, cause what I, addiction is not necessarily my jam, but what I can appreciate about it is that, people can't see me cause I'm on a podcast, but I'm quoting, they found something that quote unquote works, like whatever they're dealing with, this thing makes it feel better for a hot second. It's usually worse in the long run, but I just, that's the piece that I find so interesting. What is it about addictions that draws you to it?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about clients with addiction, especially if I'm working, like when I worked a lot with collegiate populations, so young adults, these people tend to be like some of the most brilliant, talented people you ever meet in your entire life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that saying, there's a line between brilliance and madness, and I feel like that is so true with people in addiction. Like, there's so much that these people are, like, just incredibly brilliant. And it's like walking around with that level of brilliance or that depth of understanding or that degree of emotional connection can be really isolating. And it makes so much sense to me why people turn to substances when that is like their composition, because it really is lonely. I mean, if you don't have a lot of people around you that are operating like that, and I think when addicts find each other, like they nestle into home because they're surrounded by other people that have this brilliance. And so I think working with them for me is so fun. I mean, it's so raw, it's so real, it's so non-sugar-coated, and the problem-solving of it, I love it. It's like the most exciting mystery every single time.
Yeah.
It sounds a little crazy as I say it out loud, but
I don't think it sounds crazy at all, because I sometimes will joke, like, well, when you're a therapist, you're actually a detective. Like, you're trying to get to the root of the, you know, whatever the thing is in front of you. And the problem-solving piece is, if you can't do that, you can't be a therapist. I don't think. I don't know if that's actually true, but I don't know.
Totally.
I find it.
Yeah.
I have similar feelings about that piece of it. Like I said, the addiction is not necessarily my jam, but I love being able to make connections and be like, okay, so here's this thing that occurred, and this is why it's impacting you now. So let's dig into that so it doesn't have to impact you now.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Love it.
So what was it that prompted you to open like your own clinic?
Yeah, well, I became really passionate about EMDR therapy quite a while ago. And at one point was able to kind of step into a position where I did that full time. All I did was EMDR literally like all day, which is a lot, and I don't recommend anybody do that, but at the time it was really good for me, and I learned a lot. And I started just kind of getting frustrated with, you know, other therapies have their place, and I'm not saying I never use other therapies, but for the kind of clients I was working with, these were complex clients who had been to multiple treatment stages, who've been in therapy most of their lives, and who were still not finding different results. And when I would see how EMDR would affect these clients and free people, and people that had been, you know, never had 30 days sober were now getting a year, 2 years, 3 years after relatively short treatment interventions with EMDR, I just became my passion. So I worked in some facilities that allowed me to use EMDR and to train staff in it, but I kind of hit this point where I really wanted to create a facility where anybody could walk in the door and know that every provider in that office was going to use EMDR and was going to use it well. And I wanted it to be a calculated, like, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. We do EMDR. And that's pretty much what we do. I mean, almost anyone who comes to Elk Institute is going to do EMDR at some point.
Right.
And if that's not what they're looking for, then we just let them, you know, we provide other places to go check out. But this is kind of what we do.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's such an important piece for if there's anybody that's listening that is looking for therapy in general, whether it's EMDR or not, I think that there's that piece of fit. Like, this is what we do, and if this doesn't fit for you, then maybe I'm not the right counselor for you. That doesn't mean you don't deserve treatment. That means let's figure out where you could be that would be more effective,
exactly,
kind of a thing.
Will you
do me a favor and do just like a 30-second elevator pitch of what EMDR is for if there's anybody listening that's not familiar with that?
Yeah. So let's see how good my 30-second pitch is. So the idea is that our bodies are designed to heal themselves, and we see that, like, if we think about a cut, like if I get a cut, paper cut, an injury, my body has a genetic programming to heal that, to make it become a scab and then eventually a scar. The idea is that our body also has mechanisms internally that are designed to heal themselves. And one of the mechanisms that has been found to be an agent in this is REM sleep. So when we go to sleep, there's one of the stages of sleep where our eyes are moving back and forth very rapidly. And research has found that it seems as if that's actually a problem-solving technique. And from an evolutionary psychology perspective, it really helps prepare us for the next day to protect our survival. So when you have someone who's highly traumatized, they probably have traumatic nightmares over and over and over again. And it's their brain trying to process the threat to survival, but a lot of times the body will wake up in the middle of the dream because we go into, you know, fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So if I go into flight, my body wakes me up. So it's not safe. I'm re-experiencing trauma. So we never get to continue processing the information. So the idea behind EMDR is we replicate this mechanism that already exists in the brain. We're really just turning it on, we're activating it, and we're presenting the problem to the brain that we want the brain to focus on and problem solve instead of having the brain pick its own thing during sleep. And when the brain does that, it can orient to what is an actual threat today or what is a past threat that is no longer a threat today. Because that's kind of the idea of EMDR. I respond to things in a way that don't make sense. So I'm not actually in danger, but I'm having flashbacks and intrusions and all these reactions as if I am. So we help the brain orient to the fact that you were in danger and you're not now. That's my 30 seconds. That's probably more than 30 seconds.
So it's so interesting. I don't use EMDR a whole lot, but I am trained in EMDR, and that was probably the best description I've ever heard of, like, from start to finish of, like, this is what it is, and also this is its function in therapy. I think that was, you may have just shifted my entire perspective of EMDR in your 30-second elevator pitch, just so you are aware.
Well, cool.
Goodness gracious.
Very good.
And so EMDR has a couple of different ways that you, like, some people use the light bar, some people use the little handheld buzzy, some people do the tapping on the hands. What's your preferred?
Yeah, so it's so interesting because, you know, it's called eye movement,
right,
sensitization reprocessing. And Francine Shapiro, who created or, you know, the originator of EMDR, actually came out years later and said, if I could have named it something differently, I would have. I wouldn't have called it EMDR. Because what they found is you actually don't have to use eye movements. It's really just about activating that mechanism that exists in the brain. So I actually use, we call them buzzies,
right.
And it's just a different version of bilateral stimulation. And, you know, there is some research that says eye movements are the best, but a lot of my clients have a hard time with eye movement
mm-hmm.
because it's A, distracting, it can give you a headache, mm-hmm. and for some people, having your eyes open, thinking about your most private moment, and then staring at your therapist can just feel a little weird. So with buzzies, people get, right? Like, it's
yeah.
just like, okay.
Yeah.
yeah. And so mine, you know, I like buzzies and people can close their eyes. They can drop in. It can give them a sense of, you know, some degree of privacy while they process this information.
Well, and there's also another piece, like, I don't know if you know this about me, but I have a lot of, like, vision issues. So I tried to do EMDR with the lights, and it was, like, the worst experience of my life. Like, I should probably do EMDR
yeah.
around that EMDR experience.
On EMDR.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. Because I have optic nerve damage, and the lights hurt, and I, like, can't follow, and it's, like, a whole thing. So I think that
yep.
having those
yep.
those options, even for people that maybe don't have vision issues, I think is pretty powerful.
Yeah, I mean, people with migraines, and even like wearing contacts, like, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you're shifting your eyes back and forth that often, your contacts can start to move.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have a lot of strong ocular eye muscles. There's a fatigue that can come. And again, it has its place. For me personally, I don't use it a lot, but it does have its place.
Okay. Cool. Thank you for that. I think that that was a cool perspective, like I said. You also, and this is maybe my perception of you, you seem to have a really big heart for mentorship. Like, I introduced you as one of my mentors because you do a lot for me at my day job. And also, I know that you do, like, a boatload of training outside of, you know, COVID when we're not allowed to gather in groups or whatever. Would you say that is true, that you have a heart for mentorship? And if it is true, where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back to college, really wanting to be a teacher, and it was almost like this door opened up where I could teach psychology in my current stage of life. And so I think I love to teach. I love to see people learn. My mother is a phenomenal teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She's also very brilliant, crazy intelligent. And I remember just as a kid, I mean, I was pretty good in school, but when I would get frustrated, she could just give out an analogy to teach me some principle, and it was like everything made sense in a second. And I remember that feeling and really wanting to give that to other people, where we can teach in a way that makes it make sense from a conceptual perspective. People feel good and they feel confident and they do good work.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of trainings I have been to, like as a participant, it just felt like textbook material. And I thought, okay, great, but if I don't really get this in my, you know, in my bones, so to speak, how am I going to really be effective? So I love that. I love seeing people develop into their own strengths. I think that there's a need, and it's really not about making people become something. It's about helping them become who they already are, and they're just exploring. And I've had some of the best mentors in the world, so I think that was also part of it. Like, I had... You know, I think I am the way I am because of the people that invested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been important to me to invest in others too.
I like to tell people that when I open my mouth, whatever comes out is actually a combination of all of the people who have ever mentored me.
Exactly. 100%.
Sometimes
yes.
I say things and I'm like, that was not a Jessica Brubaker original statement.
yes.
But it definitely
right.
came out of Jessica Brubaker's mouth.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes.
I love
Absolutely.
It. I love it. I'm a person, like, I also have a pretty big heart for mentorship, and also I just love to learn. And you're right, when you go to some of those trainings, it's boring. And so
mm-hmm.
when you go to a really dynamic one, it kind of like sets your soul on fire, and you're like, okay, I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to use this information
yeah.
and this knowledge to help people. I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You and I had emailed a little bit about this, because the next piece of this interview is about this and. So my
uh-huh.
beautiful journey, like, tagline, I guess, is that everybody has an and. And what I mean by that is that we don't just fit into one category. we fill different roles. And I know that you had said that you had a hard time figuring out what your and was going to be, but what did you land on?
Yeah, so mine is that I am a big planner and I am very spontaneous.
Oh.
I'm 100% both.
Okay.
Which seems like a contradiction, but I am both. 100%.
How does that show up in your life?
Oh, man. I'm very strategic. I like to have, like, a outline, a vision for anything. Like, literally, the food for the week, my life goals, my relationship, my, you know, everything. Like, I like to be strategic. I'm always obsessed with efficiency. How can you use this? It's like a whole thing. And then there's a spontaneous piece where I will make a big decision on the fly. And you know, people who work with me, they're like, okay, we're doing this, we're doing this. And then I come in and I'm like, you know what, guys, shift vision, we're doing this and this and this. And that, I think, has given me a lot of great opportunities because I feel like when I've jumped on some of those things, it has been the catalyst to the next something great. But it always falls within this, like, guideline and plan. Like, there's this big structural plan, and then the spontaneity kind of develops inside of it. You know, like, it always has to continue along to meet the goals I have outlined. But I mean, I'm spontaneous. I'm crazy spontaneous.
I love that.
But, you know, so my husband would call it impulsive, but
I mean, what's the diff?
I like the way the spontaneous sounds better.
That's it. Yeah. So what's so funny about that, I think that you and I maybe share some similarities in some of those areas. When you were talking about that, what came up for me, I literally last night, I'm going on vacation in like 2 weeks. And so last night I was sitting on my couch making an Excel document of what I wanted the meals to look like and my grocery list so that I would only have to go to Costco once and like all of these things.
Yep.
And my husband was like, do you really have to plan it to a T like that? And I said, well, how are we supposed to be spontaneous on vacation if I'm worrying about what we're going to eat?
Okay, 100%. So you get it.
Yes.
So I'm the same way. And I have to act on it when I have the excitement or passion to do it.
Right.
Because if I don't, I won't do it. You know, my family coming for Christmas. So, like, the moment I found out, okay, we're talking 6-7 months out, I'm like, okay, I have to plan every meal. I have to plan every activity. I have to plan what my grocery list is going to be. I need to figure out what the table is going to be set like. Because I was excited. So I did that for 2 days. And now I'm like, oh, so glad that's done. Because once they get here, I don't even have to think. Yeah. I already have it all mapped out. But, you know, most people look at that and be like, that is crazy. But I feel like because I do that, I'm fully present when they're here. You better have to think about me. Now you did all the thinking. Now I can just show up.
Well, and I think that that's what it is for me, at least when I'm talking about vacation or Christmas with family or whatever. I don't want to have to think about that minute stuff because I want to be present. And if you don't pre-plan it, what ends up happening is that you don't eat and then you're hungry and then you get irritated and then you get in a fight and then you're not present with the person. So I would rather just...
Right.
I'd rather have my Excel document and my Costco list and call it good.
Exactly.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
Yes.
So we're sort of talking about this already in terms of that, but what do you think are the benefits of being both like a super planner and then also like go big or go home kind of spontaneous, and what are the challenges of that?
The benefits so far in my life, and this is completely subject to change, but so far it's worked out well. So far, the big spontaneous decisions I've made, have worked out really well and have so far gotten us to places that I didn't know we could be in, you know, and in all kinds of different ways, you know, personally, professional, different ways. So that's a good. I think that the difficulty is that my brain is always thinking of ideas. And so there's a lot of almost ideas. There's a lot of spontaneous ideas that I don't act on, but I will spend days and days and days, but days, not months, not weeks, because it's spontaneous, right? But
right.
Days thinking, okay, should I do this new business venture on this part of town? And, I mean, I'll roll that through. So there's a lot of thinking, and I think, I mean, my husband does a great job rolling with it, but I think there's definitely times where he's like, okay, what? What are we doing now? Where do I need to move furniture from? What do I need? So I think there's it's a lot. It's a lot to follow. It's a lot to deal with. Luckily, he really trusts, I guess, my vision because it's worked out well for us. Mm-hmm. But I know he's like, can we just sit down for like 10 days or, you know.
And you're like, nope, if we sit down for 10 days, I'm going to come up with another idea because I'll have space to do it.
Right. That's right. So funny. Right. My brain is just always going. And that's great because it's productive, but it also can be a curse because, mm-hmm. I mean, at some point you need to just chill, you know?
Well, and that can be pretty exhausting in the grand scheme of things if you're just like, go, 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 go. So mm-hmm. I get that. I'm spiritual. I mean, like, again, I'm similar. Like, I decided to do this podcast because I was like, let's do it. I went home that day, literally, like, I'm on a run, and I'm like, I should do a podcast. And I went home and ordered a microphone from Amazon.
Yep, literally. That's me, right there.
Cool.
Nailed it.
We should be best friends, Lauren, I think. Absolutely. I think that's what just happened. So what, in all of that, in your spontaneity and also planning and, like, all of those things, what does your self-care look like? Because you are a very busy gal, and I think that that's something that, I don't know if this is true for all, but it's something that I struggle with when I get super busy, like, putting myself as important as well. So what do you do for self-care?
Yeah, I mean, I think the priority in the last year that we have really been trying to master is schedule, because it's true. I can get busy, and so I've really had to calculate, okay, but again, here's the planner, I've had to calculate my energy expenditures. So I did this, like, big personal research study where I tried, how did my energy level feel before this activity and after this activity and during? So, like, every client that I saw, like, I took data on what that was doing to my energy levels. And then I figured out, okay, really, I'm at optimal energy and optimal mood if I only see this many clients a week. And I even figured out distribution. You know, like, I can really only see this many eating disorder and this many of this complexity and this many of this based on, like, the energy flow where it doesn't get too... I'm not effective or I'm too tired. And so that has been like a huge piece. You know, Mondays are free day. Sometimes I do administration work, sometimes I do nothing. So I give myself that flexibility. But that's been huge, and really just figuring out how do I set a schedule mm-hmm. to where I'm not working. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked jobs where I work 70 hours a week. I don't want to do that anymore. So that's a big piece of it. Other self-care, I love to be outside, and it's really hard in Phoenix, especially mm-hmm. in the summer. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of day trips, love to hike. I love to just sit in nature. I like yoga. I do meditation when the gyms are open. We do it in the sauna. I drink wine. I have girlfriends. My friend and I have another side. I have a lot of side gigs. My friend and I have a side gig where we make homemade bath salts and eye pillows and candles. We make these little gift boxes.
Oh, that's so cool.
I've got little outlets here and there.
I love that. Well, and I love hearing you say that you actually were like, okay, how can I be the most effective? And, like, what does that need to look like? Because I think this is true for therapists and also outside of it, we don't use that perspective where we're like, if I don't take care of myself, that last like 10 hours is pointless. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't even effective in that time. So I might as well have just held a boundary around it and been able to give more to more people. I think that we don't think like that. So I don't think it sounds crazy at all. I'm like, that's genius. I should do that.
Yeah, and I actually found out through tracking my patterns that, and this is going to sound crazy, but, like, the less office hours I was bound to, mm-hmm. the more productive our business was from a financial perspective. That's make less money when I am not as scheduled. And I think it's because when I don't have to be sitting in these meetings all day or have to, you know, not tied to this, mm-hmm. that's when I have room to be spontaneous mm-hmm. and create. And then I start thinking of all these other, you know, endeavors that for us so far have been financially, you know, productive. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting shift for me because I always thought, no, you work more and then you're more successful. And I learned, no, you work less and then you have the freedom to be, you know, I don't know. That's
That's
been a thing I've observed.
I think that's so interesting, though, because I want to say I heard this from, like, Simon Sinek is what sounds right to me. He was talking about, like, I know this is not what you're saying, but he was talking about, like, how we're on our cell phones so frequently. That's one of his, like, pieces of his brand or whatever. And he was saying, like, what happens when you're in a restaurant and your person, like, gets up and goes to the bathroom? First thing you do is pull out your phone, right? So that's what he was talking about. And he said, when you do things like that, like, creativity happens in the blank spaces. So, like, if you don't pick up your phone, you overhear a conversation, or you just, like, your mind wanders and you go, oh, that's a good idea. And I just, I think that that's kind of the same thing, that you have more space to be creative, whatever that means, if you're not so scheduled. That's
absolutely
cool. That's cool.
Completely agree.
I love that. I love that a lot. Cool. Where's your favorite place to hike, either when it's not a million degrees out, either in the Phoenix area or just, like, around Arizona in general?
Yeah, I mean, my ultimate favorite in life has been, you know, Estes Park in Colorado, of course, a lot of people. But in Arizona, I love the Granite Belt hike in Prescott. That's where I got engaged.
Aww.
And it's just a really sweet place for my husband and I. So I love that one. My favorite.
Cool. Well, I have created this, like, super random list of questions. I actually think it's a pretty common thing to do on a podcast, to ask random questions. These are things that, particularly for myself, when I'm talking to other women, I love hearing the answers to these, because I think that it helps me gain more insight into their personality, but also into myself, because then I start to be like, I wonder what my answer to that question is. So are you cool if I ask you my random questions?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one is, how do you wake up in the morning? And I don't necessarily mean, like, what time do you get up, or necessarily what's your morning routine? Just sort of, like, do you jump right out of bed? Do you snooze your alarm 12 times? Like, what is your morning routine is definitely a part of it, but that's just not all I mean. Just how does your morning go?
Yeah, I mean, weekdays are definitely different than weekends. But weekdays, the alarm goes off, I probably snooze it twice, and then once I realize I'm reaching that point of no return, where if I don't get up now, my teeth will not be brushed for work, then I'm up, and the motivation comes, and my husband only makes us coffee, so I'll have coffee, get dressed, and head to work. But on weekends is a sweet spot, because, like, we never set an alarm, we wake up whenever we wake up, and it's just, like, a long, slow morning, so we sit and have coffee, we read, and it's just beautiful. You know, this morning we had pancakes, and it was delightful.
I love that. Yeah. I worked this morning, so I'm a little bit jealous right now of that long. It's just, I am, like, yearning for a long, slow morning. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
So we already answered this question. Are you a planner, or do you operate out of spontaneity? You are a both kind of gal. What is your most consumed beverage? Not necessarily your favorite, just what do you think you drink the most of?
Definitely water.
That's good.
Followed by coffee, and then wine.
Okay.
It's definitely my order.
You are my best friend. That is absolutely mine as well. Mine as well. Red or white?
I go through phases. Right now I'm in a red phase, but then I go back to white every now and then. I normally go on, like, a year on white and a year on red.
Okay.
Odd thing.
Do you have feelings about rosé?
I'm not a fan.
Interesting.
Not a fan.
Maybe we can't be
friends.
I don't know.
Yeah. I know it's a big favorite for a lot of people, but I just can't get on board. I really like dry wine. I've tried dry rosé, but even then, I just speak to my soul. I don't know.
You know what? You're allowed to like what you like. It's fine. I will nurse my sadness that you can't share a nice bottle of sparkling rosé with me, but that's okay. It's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine. It's fine.
Everything's fine. Right. Okay. End this interview now.
If you were to go back into a time machine to your 16-year-old self, what is one thing that you would like to tell her?
I think I would have told her to just chill out. I was high perfectionist. Just chill out. You'll be fine.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
It's fine. You're fine. Just, you don't have to obey all the dang rules. I was so into, like, rules. Like,
oh, interesting.
You know, maybe you should break some rules. Maybe these rules are not actually your friend. Yeah, I would totally go back and be like, live a little more.
Love that. I love that answer. If you were to get, so this second half of this question has evolved since I've been doing this podcast, but if you were to get back into that time machine and go 10 years in the future, what would you say to your 10 years from now self, or what do you hope she's saying to you, or like something in that realm for this question?
Yeah, I think the answer would be the same. I think I would be saying to her, I really hope that you're looking soon at retiring. And I hope she would say to me, I'm looking at retiring soon. Yeah. We're going to spend a year on the beach in Costa Rica. So hope you're ready. Yeah. That's what I'd love to hear.
That sounds so wonderful. And then how do you go to bed at night? Do you have a routine? Do you watch TV? Do you do something specific? Do you have a stretch routine? What's the tea?
Yeah, I mean, I try to have a standard bedtime. There's seasons I do better at than not. Mm-hmm. But I am one of those sleep people. If I do not get enough sleep, I'm non-functional. And everything is affected. So I have, I typically have one glass of wine before bed. My husband and I watch a show, whatever we're on at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I take a bunch of supplements every night. So say around 9:30, I take all my supplements. And I try to be in bed by 10. And we just, run a diffuser. I'm, real essential oil person. So I spray my pillow with pillow spray. And, we listen to sleep music. Mm-hmm. Or we listen to sleep stories on the Calm app. And that's it.
I love that. What's the essential oil go-to for sleep?
Well, I have, 1,000 different... I have spontaneous there. But my definite... consistent go-to is lavender. I have to have, I'm a lavender obsessed human being. I have it everywhere.
Same.
So lots of lavender.
I actually, when I go to bed, I put a little bit of coconut oil and lavender on the bottom of my feet.
Oh yeah.
It's
great.
Delightful. So it is delightful. I sleep like a baby. My little Fitbit app is like, great sleep tonight. I'm like, thanks.
High five.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's next for you? You're getting your PhD this year. Do you see yourself continuing to be on the same path that you're on in terms of LK Institute and still seeing clients and doing, workshops and things of that nature? Or is your spontaneous brain doing something different?
Yeah, well, we actually are opening a second campus,
LK Institute's
second campus in Flagstaff.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, super excited about that. I just love collegiate population. I mean, it's just, I love them. So, we're working on that right now. And so the goal for the year is to really get, the next calendar year, I guess, is to get things really up and moving in Flagstaff and keep building there. I'm presenting at the Emdria conference this year. So I'm still doing trainings and presentations. They're just all virtual, and I need to finish that PhD. So
yeah.
I would say that's about where we're at.
So I can call you doctor.
Yeah, well, one day, maybe. Mm-hmm. Cross your fingers.
Yes.
Cross my fingers, I guess.
I'll cross my fingers for you. I want you to be a doctor. Yeah. That's fine. So if somebody is listening to this and they're super interested either in seeking treatment with LK Institute or, taking a workshop or just you in following your journey, how do they find you? Are you on social? Do you have a website?
Yeah, my social media is pretty much junk. So we've been seeing this go through our website, and it's just lkinstitute.com. And that's where you can find out more about us and our story and the providers that we work with who we really believe in and really love.
Are you doing virtual trainings right now?
I am.
What's your next one coming up?
Oh gosh. I think it's like next weekend. Okay. Yeah, we're in like training season. So we've got a lot of EMDR basic training for therapists who want to get trained for the first time. We've got an EMDR and addictive disorders that's coming up, I think, in October.
Yeah.
We have an EMDR and eating disorders. We just have to put that on hold with NDRI approvals because of COVID. But yeah, there's a lot happening.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I know it's a Saturday, and not that this is work, but I appreciate you taking time out of your life to have a conversation with me and let me record it so that I can put it on the internet for the 50 people that listen to me. Hopefully it'll be more someday.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Brutiful Journey and my conversation with Lauren Day. If you liked what you heard, make sure that you snap a screenshot and share it on your social. Don't forget to tag me at Jessica M. Brew so that I can thank you personally. As a disclaimer, although I am a licensed professional counselor, this podcast is meant to inspire and it's not intended to be a replacement for therapy. If you are struggling or having thoughts of hurting yourself, please consult a qualified mental health professional or call the National Suicide Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. You matter, and you deserve the help and support. Thank you again for listening. So grateful to be a part of your journey and have you be a part of mine.